Today's podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. Joining you back as we're finally finished with college football, NFL playoffs are going on. But, you know, as we go along, football is starting to kind of clear its course, clear its cachet. And now we're sort of getting into the thick of it. We're in the mid-season point. By the time you listen to this podcast, we're right at the midway point of the season, so we might have some mid-season review that we'd like to touch on. But before I get started with any of that, I am one of your co-hosts, Andrew Reich, and I'm joined by Mr. Adam Murray.
Greetings.
Does it feel like the midway point for you yet, or does it feel like it's kind of just started?
The midway point is always the all-star break, regardless of, you know. Okay, yeah, 42 games, but it's really the All-Star break is when we start taking things seriously. All the panic trades happen.
Well, standings-wise, you're past the midway point, which is why the urgency in the All-Star break is a little more dire than you would expect. Whereas when you're in the midway point, you can start from scratch for certain teams. I'm sure there are some teams right now that are thinking, you know, if we just kind of like use our record right now as a base, we can kind of launch ourselves, and we can talk about that throughout the episode of which teams might be in a position to either, you know, fall or rise. But in the All-Star break, you're well past that. You're like, you're about like 55 games in, or maybe 53. So you're really thinking, okay, we either have to make a run now or we're doomed.
Well, considering you don't really start for till, oh, what is it, 10, 20 games in till Christmas, so does it really matter? You know, it's...
Yeah, and even though they're extending it into the like the later or midway point of October, you know, to try to prevent back-to-backs, I haven't looked at the way they're going to schedule it, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be the same number of games by this point in the season, even though the season starts earlier. Would that be correct?
Most likely. All I know is this, you know, it's like I said, the beginning of the season was just, there was back-to-backs on like the first week, and it was like, well, why are we getting these in now? It seems kind of odd.
A lot, and also, this is more of a fluky thing, but a lot of very healthy teams to start, and it stabilized through the last 2 months. But it does feel like a lot of people are kind of dropping now. I mean, Cleveland, we obviously know that they've had their issues with injuries, you know, with J.R. Smith going out. Mo Williams had, you know, wound up retiring before the season started. They had to make would you call Kyle Korver a panic trade or just a very well put, a well thought up, you know, we need a plug-in three-point shooter type of deal?
I don't think it was a panic trade. It just provides depth for an area. You know, they were very weak backcourt because once you lose Delia Dova, who do they replace him with, really? You know, Kay Felder, who's not going to provide.
Yeah, LeBron said in one of the after-practice interviews that they still need a point guard. He did say that.
Yeah, so it's not a panic move if you get a spot-up three-point shooter who could back up, oh, you're a spot-up three-point shooter who's out, and if he comes back slow, there's no harm, no foul. And you gave up essentially nothing for him because Dunleavy didn't really provide much.
Well, were you surprised that the Hawks, they didn't give up as a team? I mean, I think they've won six in a row, you know, during that stretch when they made the deal. So the Hawks still feel good. That's why there's been reports now that they pulled the Paul Millsap offers off the table, because they probably didn't hear a deal that they really liked, because they probably wanted, you know, either two firsts or, you know, a really good player in a first. And also, Millsap probably wanted some guarantees that he would be able to get like a max extension wherever he went. So there was a lot of contingencies there. So they pulled it off the table, but it didn't feel like they gave up on Korver. But why was it so easy for them to let Korver go?
Because he's what, 36 and doesn't play defense, and you got a first round pick for him. So he's not in your future. You get more minutes for Bembry and
Torian Prince.
Yeah. Torian Prince. So you free up a little bit of a log jam, but, you know, at the same time, like, yeah, they you know, the Millsap thing was kind of ugly, and yeah, the team's playing better, but, you know, just watching them play against the Celtics, Dwight Howard just doesn't look like the same player anymore.
That was a very exciting game on Friday night. Some of these games, you know, even when you get into the midway point, like we're talking about, you know, some of the games are still kind of blasé, even the nationally televised ones on TNT and ESPN. Like, I remember the TNT one that they just had this past Thursday. One of them was a Laker game, and the other one was a game that was I think it was the Knicks and the Bulls, and it was just so like forgettably mediocre that I just didn't even want. But Hawks Celtics in Atlanta in what they call the Fortress, that was actually a very entertaining game. Isaiah Thomas with a jump with about 2 seconds left to put it away. Thomas had another really good statistical performance, but you were talking about some of the takeaways that you had from that game.
Yeah, just, you know, seeing how Atlanta's bouncing back, and, you know, you were like, oh, they're in second place, they were like 9-2 to start, and it was just like, yeah, mm-hmm. Wait till they start playing tougher teams, and they started losing, then dysfunction came in, then do we blow it up, do we keep it? But it's just, you know, the Dwight Howard signing is going to look kind of awful in a year or two.
Yeah,
but you know, Atlanta's going, but just like, you know, we mentioned, there's a lot of just mediocre, you know, just look at New York and Chicago, like you mentioned, just pure mediocre basketball, and it's easy for a team to get hot. Look at Washington, all of a sudden they hit 500 and they're back in the
swing.
They
did have the loss to your Celtics as the same team that you were just talking about that beat the Hawks, so, you know, Celtics making a little bit of run, 25-15. Pretty sure this is the first time this season they're 10 games over 500. Would I say, is that correct? At any point this season,
you're the standings keeper.
But yeah, Washington got the loss to the Celtics team that's playing pretty hot right now. A little bit of a weird dust up where Crowder was talking trash with John Wall. John Wall retorted, and then Crowder poked his finger in his nose, and then Wall came back with a slap to the face. Were you fine with no suspensions there?
I don't know, it seemed, I don't know, it was very...
you don't think it matters, huh?
It wasn't, if we start suspending every little tiff by the end of, you know, the end of the season, everybody's going to be suspended. It didn't seem as heated as, it just...
If you touch my face, I am going to come after you. I will say that. Do you think that's kind of more of like sort of street code, where it's like an unwritten rule type of violation?
You know, they both got fined, and it's, you know, the first offense, and they're both not repeat. If, you know, if it was like a repeat offender, if it was like Draymond Green, be like, okay, how many times do we need to warn you? But this is just, why should you be suspended? Okay, look, guys, come on. It was a heat of the moment thing.
Yeah.
You know, calm down. Everybody go your own way. Next time, be clean.
Yes, it's not as well, like, it's not as well coordinated as the Grayson Allen tripping stuff, is it? That stuff's just weird. I don't understand why he trips people, but I do think that the fact that he does it so much lends – sort of the Draymond Green effect, like you were saying. Like, it gets to the point where everything is ticky-tacked about him because of the history being there. So the reasonable doubt has been removed, you know?
Yeah, it takes a long time to shed labels. And, you know, one trip, okay, that's – you know, okay, you missed – you know, okay, you were – frustrated too. It's like, well, that seems strange. And okay, there's a third one. It's like, what did you? Why? You're the only player who's doing this repeatedly.
The Elon one, the one against Elon, was so obvious. He scissor kicked him. He wrapped him up in like a scissors, like leg scissors. It was like obvious. Like, whoa. Any wrestling fan knows exactly what that is. That's
in
a
the
leg
end.
Lock.
They all became obvious. Where even it's like oh, that was just a mistake, and you know, that was just a brain fart. It's like, nope. In the end, that turned out to be the same thing with Draymond Green. Like, how can you? You know, I'm just playing hard. It's like most people don't punch other people in the balls playing hard.
This isn't a college basketball podcast, but you know, Grayson Allen is fascinating because it's just making Duke so weird and fun to watch because it's just the hate, because Grayson Allen, like, he personifies like Duke hate. You know, he's the more talented than you would expected, like, white guard who's kind of obnoxious, has that punchable face, and he's just like, it's like everything put together that you hate about Duke is rolled into one guy, and people are just kind of piggybacking off of it. You know, I don't know if we have that in the NBA. I mean, the Warriors with Draymond comes close, like, to villainry, but I mean, would you say that, or are most of the teams somewhat likable?
Most of the teams are likable, and even the unlikable ones, like
the Knicks,
and just look, you know, like, let's say DeMarcus Cousins, who, okay, another technical, another, you know, selfish play, another thing. There aren't really many villain teams other than, like you said, Draymond Green. who's just like, I'm going to be that guy. You want me to be the bad guy? I'll be the bad guy.
Well, Kevin Durant's trying to do the Sinestro, chin beard. What do you think of that? Like, it's getting a little bit bad guy-ish.
He's trying to, but in the end, it's just like, well, you're just, you know, you're shooting threes and just doing your jump shots. You're not, you know, antagonizing. Like, the Pistons were like, yeah, we're going to be the villains.
They were the bad guys.
We're going to be the bad guys. We don't care. We will be that. Whereas the Warriors, like, no, we still want to be liked. We don't, you know, we'll be the bad guy. Like, you're not really the bad guys.
The Spurs in the slow them down defensive years, I don't want to call them bad guys, but they were sort of like, they had a bit of a corporate, like, or maybe like cult-like aura to them, where it's like, it's our way and our way wins. You know what I'm saying? That made them somewhat unlikable. And they were a little dirty. You know, the Robert Horry, Bruce Bowen, guys like that, they would take cheap shots. You know, and you couldn't stand it because they'd either get away with it or they could afford the fouls because they would be so far ahead.
Yeah, they'd be so far ahead. Plus, they weren't really centerpieces.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
It's the old, you know, what was it, Dean Chaney? You know, gonna send out a goon.
John Chaney, with Temple. Yeah, that was funny. I remember that. I think he broke the poor guy's arm when he sent the goon out there.
Something like that. It's just, yeah, you're gonna... You know, Ron Artest in his old age now is just like, yeah, I'm content to just be a player coach. And
well, because he just doesn't have the energy anymore. When you get to that age, you know, we'll talk about another venture that involves, you know, time passing by some of these former players in a minute that I really am fascinated by, that you're unsurprisingly not so much fascinated by. But I feel like, you know, as you get older, you just don't have the energy to fight it off. You just want to play, you know. You're just happy to be on a roster almost, you know?
Yeah, the hot-headedness and the heatedness and all that, that's just for the young people, whereas, you know, you become more of a professional. And
our superstar hothead, DeMarcus Cousins, that you just name-dropped, he was in the news. He's been in the news for quite a number of reasons, some not for the right – not for the good ones. But there was a report that came out that he is either – I don't know how firm the report is or if it came from an agent – close to Cousins, if it came from a team official that's sort of being optimistic or what it was, but reports are surfacing that Cousins is planning to sign the 35% or, you know, 7-year max, you know, 30% max extension. It would be something in the neighborhood, I think it was it like 6 years, $200 million or 5 years, $200
million? $210 million.
Yeah, it's basically the max that Sacramento can offer him based on the number of years that he's played in the league and you know the salary that they can start him out. It doesn't surprise me too much, but a lot of people are just kind of like already like turning the page of, oh, I guess DeMarcus Cousins isn't going anywhere. And I say that's to be continued, because like just because he's signing the extension so he can get the most money he possibly can doesn't mean he's not going to demand a trade 1 to 2 years after Sacramento. It just elongates his stay in Sacramento by a couple of years.
But the difference is – he's not going anywhere for 2 years because nobody's salary will ever match up with that for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Like who can offer $30 million, you know, three first round picks and promising players? Well, you can't.
You're talking about when the extension kicks in.
Yeah. So
okay.
You know, it's one of those. Well, since the new CBA and the cap and well, now you know, you'd be a fool to turn down so much money as opposed
to... have to swap them with contracts that has been signed since either the summer of 2016 or this following summer. You'd have to put those contracts in the mix.
Yeah, and the amount of players he could be traded for are so few now, you can't get those prospects mm-hmm. that you possibly would look for. Like, let's say, you know, let's just say, who are the intriguing people? Let's say Boston, Minnesota, Denver. They all have young pieces. Oh, yeah, that'd be great. I'll trade my superstar for, you know, 3-year top player.
But I'd throw Toronto in there just because they're trying to add another piece, and they do have good young prospects.
Yeah, but you can't add anybody. It would have to be DeRozan and, like, all the young
Powell
people
to
add it up. But it's just like, well, you can't do that because the salaries are so offsetting And that's, you know, it comes down to just the old money versus the new money.
It would turn into like a Clyde Drexler trade, like a superstar for superstar trade type of thing.
You could only literally trade him for five people, or it has to be the Herschel Walker. Oh, well, we'll give you the entire here's 10 players for him.
Yeah, you could either do like the quantity or the quality. Like I remember one of the only straight up superstar trades I can remember offhand was Jason Kidd for Stephon Marbury. Do you remember that one in 2001 with the Nets and the Suns where it was just straight up? I don't even think they added anything to the deal. It was just, you take my star, I'll take your star. And it didn't work out for the Suns at the end, but it freed up some point guard space so they could get Steve Nash in free agency a few years later, but that's a whole nother story. But anyways, you would have to hey, I've got DeMarcus Cousins, you've got DeMar DeRozan, let's make a swap. Like, that's how it would have to do. You know, and they would both have to be in complete agreement that they've sort of run their course with each superstar at their respective teams and say, let's change things up and see how it goes. Cousins' behavior is also another thing that's going to get in the way of a move like that. Would you agree?
Yeah, because he's been in the league for 7 years and still hasn't learned a thing, it seems like.
What's your thought about him punching the chair?
Typical, you know, typical Cousins fashion.
I mean, would you call him the best big man in the NBA now? Or the best offensive big man? Or you got another guy?
No,
maybe DeAndre Jordan, Rudy Gobert?
He's the best big man.
Hassan Whiteside, better than Whiteside?
Cousins is the number one center in the league right now.
He's very sought after, but he does come with tons of baggage. So, you know, the Kings are deciding, you know, look, we want to win. We want this 8 seed badly, even if we get blown out by the Warriors. We want to do it. I think they're on the outside looking in right now behind Portland. That's sort of a dogfight there because Portland has been such an underachiever that, you know, they've sort of just totally tumbled, you know, but to the bottom part.
The whole West has been underachieving.
Once you get out of the 7th spot, yeah, it's
you're fighting for the 8th spot, you're under 500.
Well under. Like, Portland is 6 games under 500 as we speak.
And, you know, remember a few years ago, like, well, we should get rid of divisions, let's do the best 16 because the West is so good. And, you know, we were like, it's going to change. It's going to change. Watch out. And all of a sudden now, you know, the way...
Yeah, but I'm still glad because if that was the case, then, you know, Utah would be ahead of Houston. You know what I'm saying? Houston would wind up with a lower seed, but they would still get home court advantage. Like, the one thing that the NBA smartly did is that even though the seeds might be higher, it doesn't mean you get home court advantage. The team with the better record gets the home court. But then they totally ditched that with the divisional standings and said, no more tiers. We're just going to go with the best teams. You know?
As of right now, Portland is 8th in the West. They would be tied with Detroit for 11th in the East.
That is true. Yeah, I mean, the East, the middle of the East has been very, very good. Like, I've actually been very fascinated with almost all the teams. Milwaukee has played well.
Washington, Indiana, Charlotte, Chicago, Detroit, New York.
I am so stunned at how bad Indiana is defensively now. They went to the O2 Arena in London, you know, for the global games. We'll talk about the two Mexico games in a second. But they gave up 140 points to the Denver Nuggets. Now, first of all, I don't know what the motivation was as they scheduled it back in the summer behind a Pacer-Nuggets game. I think that maybe the international touch that the Nuggets had with a lot of their players may have had an influence there. Would that be safe to say, or is it more of a random thing?
It basically comes down to who's willing to give up a home game.
Okay. And I'm pretty sure that was the Nuggets home game.
I think it was as well.
But they scored 140. They played like a home team. They scored 140 points on the Pacers to win that game. I mean, it's just I'm stunned at how bad defensively they are now. They're either middle of the pack to bad. You know, even with a good shot blocker, a young one like Miles Turner, Paul George is still pretty good defensively. But they, you know, he debuted his new shoe in London for that game. But just a lot of issues there with that Indiana, but they're still good. You know, they're still a game above 500. Charlotte, like, you know, you want to pat yourself on the back for Charlotte being at 20-20 now.
should I pat that it's good or it's what I
expected? Like,
because
you thought they were going to devalue as the season went along when they got to the strong start.
They've all sort of averaged out, like, all this whole middle of the pack. Like we mentioned, none of these teams are essentially good. We, you know, the thing about you've been defending Charlotte since day one. I've been trying to, mm-hmm. you know. And it's just Kid Gilchrist hasn't come back really much at all.
He's just – he can't score. He can offer defense and steals and blocks, but at the small forward position. But outside of that, he's to me, he's just another player, you know.
Yeah, Marvin Williams hasn't fallen apart yet, and it's just, you know, Kemba Walker carries that team. And, you know, every time I look, I'm like, how many threes did Kaminsky shoot for no reason? And up there's mm-hmm. Kaminsky, you know, plus minus minus 12 and took five threes.
Cody Zeller's not setting the world on fire after signing the extension. You know, he's a decent player. You know, I like him more than Gorgie Jang. Gorgie Jang, ugh, that's looking like a bad contract already.
I don't know if it's looking like a bad contract because that whole team is in just disarray. Speaking of just, you know, Minnesota in disarray, I think a lot of people are sort of shocked how Chris Dunn has sort of done nothing.
Well, he did get that really sweet move on Shabazz Napier for the ADHD crowd. I mean, that was nice. You saw the one where he dribbled it like around him. Like,
yeah, but
he didn't do it even between the legs or over his head. A1. He literally dribbled it around his body, you know, and then went back for the hammer play to Gorgie Jang. But yeah, I think his I had actually written it down recently, but his averages are like under double digits across the board. It's like 4 points, 2 rebounds, and 2 assists.
And he's not pushing Rubio for minutes. And everyone's like, well, we need to get rid of Rubio. When you get rid of it, it's going to be Chris Dunn. And the team, you know, the team is just playing awful, and he hasn't been.
And they're playing Tyus Jones a little bit, right? Because of the fact that Dunn's been a little unreliable.
Yeah, they're playing. The only reason they're playing, you know, Dunn is, I think, because, you know, you invest the number 5 pick in him. You have to
put
him on the court. But it's just he's not, you know. Buddy Hield has sort of become the, we know he's the Kyle Korver now. He's just going to be a spot-up shooter.
You mean December Eastern Conference Rookie of the Month, Buddy Hield?
Who we think has reached his ceiling already.
His I'll say this. His 3-point percentage is actually good for a rookie. His overall field goal percentage is bad, which means he's terrible at finishing at the rim or taking mid-range twos.
Doesn't play good defense.
And he's also – yeah, that's true too. He's also automatic at the free throw line, so you better not foul him. That's the other thing about Buddy. But, yeah, you know, the Pelicans, this is my little soapbox. They're doing better. You know, they had a couple wins against the Knicks. They were the beneficiary of that game where the Knicks just totally, like, took the day off after Derrick Rose disappeared on the Monday – after the Monday shoot-around. They couldn't find him. Carmelo Anthony looks completely disenchanted. He basically talked himself out of the game by talking trash to the referee during a timeout. And the Pelicans did win the game, but Davis got a hip bruise or some kind of bruise from a dirty play by Kyle O'Quinn when he pushed him into the stands after a run out. But so they got those two wins. They lost to the Bulls after Jimmy Butler came back from the flu. But outside of that, they're just playing okay. You know, they're right there in the thick of it to try to get that that 8th spot in the West. But then again, who isn't? You know, but Buddy's doing okay. You know, but that's the best I can say about Buddy Hield.
Because this was a draft that was supposed to be huge and deep, yeah. And nobody's doing anything.
I will say this: the Jamal Murray Buddy Hield debate that's local here, that's going to come down to the wire over the years. Like I got a feeling, like Murray's sort of kind of fallen a little bit after the first month where he had a couple of good outings. Also because Denver is so – they're so makeshift with their roster in terms of like they don't know what their best lineups are, so they just kind of throw in whatever they can. You know, so they – like you'll have games where Murray gets like more than 20 minutes and then you'll have some games where he plays like less than 15.
Oh, yeah. You'll have games where Nurkic and Jokic are starting the front court.
And then Nurkic doesn't play at all. Yeah.
He doesn't play, and then all of a sudden Gallinari is the starting power forward, and Fareed gets no minute, like 2 minutes, and it's just Denver has
too much. I think Fareed's gone. Like, I think just – I'm already automatically thinking he's going to get traded. Would you say the same thing?
Yeah, but the thing is, what do you trade him for? What can
– A first-round pick. I mean, because he's $13 million. I mean, you just want to get him off your hands.
It's a value contract now, but how many more first-round picks does Denver need when all you have is just young talent across the board?
Well, you finally ran out of the Knicks ones. Maybe just try to get a couple more. I don't know. It's a good point because they already made it. Didn't they make a move with Joffrey Laverne just because they didn't have room for him? Like, in the summer, you know?
They didn't have room, and yeah. he's a decent player, and he's.
But Fareed is the remainder of that Ty Lawson group that they just like that kind of like kicked Brian Shaw to the curb. And turned out to be the players turned out to be cancers in the locker room. I'm not saying Fareed's a cancer, but it just feels like he's just not.
He was part of that old group, but you got Moutier. You're not moving him. You got Harris and cousin Jamal. You have Hernan Gomez is your three. Yeah. We don't know what's going to happen with Gallinari and Chandler. I'm pretty sure both might be free agents. I know Gallinari is.
I think Chandler's got another year, but Gallinari's got an opt out that he'll use, so you might want to trade him to get value.
Yeah, and then you got Nurkic, Jokic as your big men. So it's just like, what does adding another first round pick do anything for your team? You have so much young talent.
The Jokic head is growing in the Jokic Nurkic two headed monster for sure. I'll say that
it's growing, but they're both providing even, Nurkic is like, I'm playing 25 minutes. I'm good with it for now.
Yeah, it's not like Nurkic is a Beetlejuice head. Like, he's trying,
Well,
it's just
his
Jokic
first year he was.
Yeah.
When he was a rookie, he was then all of a sudden the injuries came. Now he's sort of more down to earth. Is like, okay, I'm only 21 now. I can still learn as opposed to.
Yeah, Wancho's barely playing. I mean, I kind of expected that anyway. But, Denver's fun to watch. I can say that almost about every team in the NBA right now is that I can turn on any of their games on League Pass, and I'll probably get a nice, entertaining stretch out of almost all of the games that I watch, even the Pelicans, because AD is so good. There are a few teams that are just unwatchable, like the Kings I can't stand to watch. A lot of people like the soap opera-ness of the Kings. I don't really care for it, because it doesn't have anything to do with the actual basketball.
Then they're changing their rosters up daily, and it's just, you have Willie Cauley-Stein, and
that man is a disaster. I mean, they've got to move past him. I would actually move him now to get something.
Yeah, because you have him and McLemore. All of a sudden, they're now. It's like, well, Cauley-Stein wasn't bad. He's just not going to be. He's like the Tyson Chandler. He's not going to be ever a super guy, but
he's like a very poor man's Tyson Chandler.
He's super young, and he's like Tyson Chandler was when he was young. Just you have no game, but you're a nice defensive. You're decent, so I don't.
But you had this whole. We started the whole point talking about Minnesota. Did you have a point to finish about the Timberwolves?
Oh no, it started with what can you possibly offer for Cousins? Minnesota might have the best. Oh well, you have talent at every position, but you can't equal the salary.
If you could do it, who would you move with Minnesota? Like if say Vlade Divac calls, or maybe he accidentally calls him, thinking he's talking to another team because Vlade's like the worst GM in the NBA. And he says to the Timberwolves, look, I'm looking to trade Cousins, but I need two of those three guys. Like, who are you trading?
It would have to be everyone but Towns and Wiggins.
Okay.
Well, it would have to be Levine, Rubio, and Deng.
That's what I'm saying. Would you consider Wiggins indispensable?
Yeah, as opposed to it would have to be either him or, who would you keep over him? You keep Levine?
Well, I think that's been a debate. I would trade Levine first. You know,
people created the lofty expectations of him. It's like, oh, well, he's going to be the next great superstar. It's just like, well, yeah, but he's super young and
his 3-point efficiency being to the point where it is has been very, very encouraging for anybody. If Thibodeau really wants to make the move, I can't imagine Thibodeau is pleased with the team he has, even though they are very young. Like, even Stan Van Gundy, when he got there and he had that losing record his first season there, it wasn't like he went in there saying, well, this is a really young team and we're going to figure it out. No, he made moves. He got Reggie Jackson. He dumped Josh Smith. He just dumped him. He released him. And so, I can see Thibodeau making a move. Now, they already gave away one with the extension to Gorgui Dieng, so that's off the table at least for a year before they can move him. But I feel like there's one big move left for Thibodeau to make.
Well, yeah, but just the roster is just too young and – your veterans you brought in aren't going to be, they're not efficient or good, and it's just you have, you know, these kids don't know how to play, and, well, here's your, you know, super defensive set. Well, they have no idea what they're doing. Even look at the Knicks. They don't know how to play defense either, and they're all old professionals.
And when I was talking about the teams being entertaining, like, even some of the teams that are sort of, like, car wrecky, like the or train wrecky, like the Chicago Bulls and the New York Knicks, like they're unlikable, but there's a little bit of entertainment value out of some of the players that are there. You know, I love watching Jimmy Butler. Dwayne Wade's still got a little bit of bounce left in him. I mean, I've seen a couple of games where he can still go. One team that's sort of very blasé is the Phoenix Suns, but they went to Mexico City for the, you know, to finish off this global games, or, you know, that the NBA, the campaign that the NBA does where they outsource games into the foreign lands. And they had two in Mexico. They lost to Dallas, which is an accomplishment upon itself because the Mavericks are terrible. And then they actually beat the Spurs in a game where the Spurs seemed like they were kind of playing sleepy. But Devin Booker was outstanding in both games with 39 points in each game.
He was the only one who was really doing anything. Now, there's a definition of a team who's just tanking is Phoenix, of just, you know, the coach
doesn't...
Well,
Miami is close.
No, see, there's a difference, which, let me just get into this real quickly. Phoenix is tanking because you're playing Marquese Chris, who you just, every time you watch him, it doesn't look like he has any clue what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
He just looks completely lost on defense. He's just taking bad shots, and, oh, well, he's getting points. Well, yeah, because that's what you do. You start somebody who's not ready, and then his backup is Bender, who has been efficient, and he's been decent. But, again, rookie, kind of lost out there. Miami just has literally nobody, but half their team seems to be D-League cults from a year or two ago.
Justice Winslow's done for the shoulder, so they had to bring in Roddy Magruder as a starting small forward, which, I mean, when Roddy Magruder's on your starting roster, that's a give up. I mean, I'm sorry, that's a give up.
It's not tanking if you literally don't have talent on your team.
Yes.
When you signed Deion Waiters because literally he was the best person you could possibly sign, and then he fails there, it's like, well, we don't have anybody, period.
Yeah.
Tanking is putting bad people to make your team worse. Miami can't tank because they don't have, you know, first round picks. Like, well, we need to play a minute to get better.
Wait a minute. Are you questioning the Phoenix Suns starting Marquese Chris? How dare you?
Yeah, you know, starting Marquese Chris and Tyson Chandler. Come on.
Now, Chandler's racked up some decent rebounding numbers in the last 2 weeks. I think he had 15 in the game against the Spurs in Mexico City. But yeah, it's a very forgettable team. I've seen him play a lot of minutes for Tyler Ulis. Ulis is not ready to play in the NBA. Okay, he's just not. He's too small, and he just doesn't have the moxie to play point guard.
He's decent. It's just, you know, the Brandon Knight experiment is failing, and
yeah, that they might have to move him. They might have to move Brandon Knight.
You know, T.J. Warren isn't really lighting anything up, and it's just, you know, the team's a mess, and they're like, well, we don't care. Our coach isn't really doing much, but that's tanking. Brooklyn, they're not tanking because they don't have players to tank.
I heard this one on, I think, Nate Duncan's podcast with Danny LaRue, and it's actually a good point. How fascinating would it have been if the Suns have kept that pick that wound up with Philadelphia for with the Lakers, and the Suns and the Lakers would have both had motivation to tank at the same time so that one could keep the other's pick. That would have been fascinating.
Yeah, would have, but
they traded it for Brandon Knight.
As are a lot of different scenarios that came out. Well, that just didn't work out that way.
Yeah. So let's sort of talk about, because we kind of talked about the middle and the bottom. We'll kind of shoot to the top here. I saw Houston lose a game, or they actually lost two in a row. They lost, I don't remember the first team that they lost to, but the one they lost to on Friday was the Memphis Grizzlies, where they were up big, and the Memphis, I don't know what it is, but offensively they just seem better. You know what I'm saying?
Memphis is just always one of those feisty teams where once you count them out, mm-hmm. like, yeah, this is the year they're going to suck, this year they're going to suck, and all of a sudden, well, they're old men.
But here's the trick. It's like a middling stock. You don't want to put too much stock into it. Because the moment you do that and you start pimping them, like, remember when they got to that hot start in the 2014-15 season and they had the best record in the league the first month? And everyone's like, oh, and people were starting to jump on the Grizzlies, and they immediately started to sap down. And it was like, you know that's going to happen with the Grizzlies. So you can't go too high, but you never go too low with Memphis. You know,
yeah,
the style's different. I think offensively they've given way more freedom to Mike Conley and Marc Gasol. I think Zach Randolph has embraced that six-man role. Thankfully, it didn't ruin the chemistry of the team, and the three-point shooting's doing better. You know, they got Andrew Harrison there. They got Troy Daniels, who's like kind of a sniper type of three-point shooter. But yeah, anyways, they beat the Houston Rockets. The Oklahoma City Thunder, we're gonna always talk about the Harden v. Westbrook thing. You know, we might discuss that with the midseason if we throw out some midseason awards at the end of the show. But the Thunder, I don't want to say they're playing terribly because Westbrook is sort of propping them up all, basically by himself. But, you know, they lost to Minnesota. They had that loss to the Houston Rockets on TNT last week. They're not playing as well as they started out is the best way I could say it.
Well, I think a lot of it is, you know, you could say, yeah, the Harden-Westbrook thing. But now I think we could also say Serge Ibaka thing because, you know, having a 3-and-D guy in Roberson and then having Sabonis who can't score or do anything as well, sort of, you know, like, you know, Westbrook is propping the team up, and if he sort of has an off night, they're really sort of doomed because Oladipo, he's back from an injury,
but he's a good scorer, and his 3-point shooting has gotten a lot better than it was when he was in Orlando, but he's not the Jabari Parker to Russell's Giannis. You know what I'm talking about?
Exactly.
He's not a great sidekick. Like, you know, Russell was the sidekick to Durant. I mean, let's be serious. I mean, you see it in Golden State right now. Everyone was saying, well, Kevin Durant's going to become the sidekick. It's like, no, Kevin Durant's the best player on the team. It's going to rotate that way where everybody else has to wind up deferring to him with Golden State. It's going to change the way the team plays in a ways. And that's sort of what happened. So Russell was the sidekick to KD. Russell hasn't found his yet. You know, I don't know if it's Steven Adams who's playing better, but he's not sort of peaked.
Yeah. He's sort of not peaked, plateaued.
But I think he can be better. Like, I think he can get better.
Cantor's plateau, that team has sort of plateaued, and, you know, we talked about Alex Abernas.
Well, they're so desperate for shooting that they needed Abernas to be, like, the off-guard three guy, you know?
Yeah, and that's the thing is you shouldn't need to have that, you know, emergency need for shooting, and all of a sudden now you do because of, man, I'm not going to say Sabonis is terrible, but
he's a rookie, man. I mean, like, when you're in the Keith Bogans role where they start you for the first 10 minutes of the game, you're not going to play well, man. I mean, that's like Marquise Chris. Like, that dude is like being positioned to fail, you know?
Fair enough.
So Houston, I mean, are they the funnest team to watch in the NBA, or do you have, like, maybe is it Golden State for you? I think Houston's incredibly entertaining.
Offense does make it easier to watch.
A lot, tons
like,
of
like
threes,
watching,
yeah.
You know, watching the Spurs and their slowdown, Memphis and their slowdown. It's just like, is this game? You know, the only thing I'm hoping for is like, okay, it'll be a nice quick game because they're slowing it down so much.
Milwaukee, because they're just so different. Like, when you watch them, they're good defensively. Their field goal percentage is very high, so they make a lot of shots. But they're not, like, great offensively. So they're sort of, like, middle of the pack in terms of, like, their efficiency. But when you watch them play and you actually see the players on the court and their length and how out of position some of the players are, teams have to attack them differently because they can find advantages in different positions, like Giannis at guard and Jabari sometimes playing at the three spot at small forward. You know, the only traditional guy they have is Greg Monroe at center, and he looks like a fish out of water. You know, it's like – so they're kind of entertaining to watch for me. The other one is the Raptors because their offensive PER is like at a record high. It's actually better than Golden State's. Now, are you convinced that the Raptors' offense is better than Golden State's or Cleveland's?
No, because Cleveland and Golden State just shoot, you know, can shoot lights out from three, whereas Toronto's like, look, we're not going to be a three-point shooting team. We're just going to be mid-range jumpers and go with our game.
That's true. Yeah, that's not what DeRozan does. Lowry, he likes to hoist the threes, but he's not like a shot put type of three-point shooter. He makes them. Like he takes his time with the ones that he makes. Whereas I'll tell you one funny thing that I saw when I was doing some research that. The Boston Celtics actually make more threes per game than the Warriors do, and I was trying to figure out why, and I think I found it. Durant only averages like two made threes a game. They've kind of played him in that like roamer role in the paint, and then offensively he sort of plays the point forward in a ways, even though he averages 26 points a game and he's the best player and the top scorer. But they don't camp him out at the 3-point line as much as you would think in Golden State.
Well, they can't because Pachulia plays like 15 minutes, and you have to get Iguodala in, and Iguodala's not going to play a four.
Yeah, and Iguodala's numbers, I mean, he's at 25 minutes a game, but he's not as effective as he used to be, is the best way I could put it. You know, so now you basically have a need at the small forward and at the power forward position with Durant having to basically play both roles. Moving with the Warriors here, let's go ahead and just kind of talk about their stretch because they have the Martin Luther King Day marathon coming up this coming Tuesday, I believe it is, huh? Or is it Monday?
Monday.
And so, I have no idea because I actually have to work on Martin Luther King. Do you work on Martin Luther King Day?
I work every day.
So you don't take off from Martin? Like, your work does not take off from Martin Luther King Day?
It's a company holiday, but I work
Christmas. Oh, it is?
Christmas.
So it is a company holiday.
If your TV's on and there's stuff going on, there's somebody working, so...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're not in that wheelhouse there, but anyways, I mean, I'll just scan through quick games. We're not going to analyze them, but you got Hawks at Knicks, Portland at Washington, Philadelphia at Milwaukee. The Pelicans play the Pacers, Magic Nuggets, Hornets. Hornets versus Celtics, and then you go to the TNT game at 7:00, and Cleveland is going to take their return trip. With the Golden State Warriors, they're going to be back in that building for the first time since Game 7 of the Finals when they won the championship. They had a very exciting game on Christmas Day. We talked about it on the show. Cleveland eked it out with a Kyrie jumper. Golden State sort of fell apart offensively in the last few minutes or last 2 minutes. Is there anything to psychoanalyze here about this game? I think there's an angle here that I'll talk about in a second. But what do you see with this game?
Too soon.
Oh, come on. You're going to throw all of that ranting away that I just did.
You have these two games that are 3 weeks apart, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're not going to, all this will be built up to May.
Well, there's history there because the Martin Luther King Day game last year was sort of the conundrum for Cleveland when Golden State blew them out. And then David Blatt, after a game, they played one game after that. But after that one, David Blatt was fired. And they plugged in Tyronn Lue, and that was what sort of started the change in scenery in Cleveland with LeBron, and they started to get going. And they didn't play the Warriors again until the finals because they had already played the other game on Christmas Day. Same schedule.
Yeah, that's the same thing. It's just mm-hmm. Let's space it apart a little bit. This is your, literally the two marquee games of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we blowing them so soon?
Do you feel like sometimes the regular season scheduling of these certain teams and how they match up, do you think that can work as an advantage or a disadvantage for some teams? Like, I'll give you an example. The Cleveland Cavaliers have already played the Raptors 3 times. So say the Raptors make a change at the trade deadline with an addition or subtraction, and they play each other 1 time. So you don't really get a good feel of them because you've only gotten 1 game with that roster. So does it really work at any advantage, or is it just another regular season game?
It's just a regular season game. It doesn't matter. Regular season games.
But does spacing it out, evenly make a difference versus like pounding them out early or pounding them out late? I remember last season, didn't the Warriors and the Spurs play each other 3 times in the last 2 months?
Yeah, something like that.
And they didn't play each other in the playoffs, obviously, because the Thunder beat the Spurs. But it's one of those things where you're never sure. And then there are some situations where teams will only play each other 3 times, like same conference opponents. There are occasions where they will not play each other 4 times; they'll play each other 3 times. I guess maybe that can make a difference. But if so, it's very, very small. But
well, Mm-hmm. You've answered your question by, in the end, you don't know who you're playing in the playoffs, so that's why every regular season game is just that. It's a regular season game.
Yeah, it's all retrospect. It's all one of those ones where you, when you look back on it, you could say, oh, that made a difference. Like, the Martin Luther King Day game last year did make a difference because of what happened later. Now, can this one? Well, first, they got to get there. They got to get back to the promised land. But with the Warriors, I find it interesting for this reason, Adam, because they play the Thunder right after that on Wednesday night on ESPN. Now, there are so many reasons why we're paying attention to the Thunder-Warriors game. Even though they're both in Oakland, we still have yet to see the Kevin Durant return game at Oklahoma City, which is going to be, even for a fan like you who's got a very level head, it has to be kind of juicy. Would you say
it'll be? Yeah, just well, which week did ABC get that game? Because you know, it's not gonna be anywhere else.
Oh, you mean Little John's game? The not Little John. Is that Little John? They're doing turned down for what this year? They did Flashing Lights last year, and this year it's turned down for what? For the promotion of the ABC games. It's been all over the ESPN platforms, but they had the Russell Westbrook game where he went to Golden State, and he wore the photographer jersey, which was making fun of Durant because he was the photographer for the Players Tribune for Super Bowl 50, so he was making fun of Durant. And the Golden State totally blew out the Thunder. That was like the first or second week of the regular season when that happened. The Christmas Day – then they had the Christmas Day game with the Cavaliers. Now you come back to both of these, you know, big storyline matchups where you got Cleveland and you've got – the Thunder. They blew out the Thunder, but they lost to Cleveland. What do you do you think it's going to be anything different with these two matchups, or do you think it doesn't really matter much?
Not really. It doesn't really matter much because how much effort do you want to put into a regular season game?
Yeah, and how much did it matter to Cleveland that they lost both times to Golden State?
Exactly, because
didn't the Warriors own the Thunder in the regular season last year before the playoffs?
Well, they kind of owned everybody pretty much.
Yeah, but they beat them. I think they beat them all four times in either.
Yeah, and all four. But once, yeah, it's you have seven games as opposed to, well, we have 82. We don't want to have to take three, you know, we don't want to be tired for the next three games because we spent all our energy on this one.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if things get away early, all right, we'll just sort of phone it in and. Regular season's regular season. That's just pretty much it.
To finish off the TNT Monday doubleheader there for Martin Luther King Day, you've got the Thunder and the Clippers. The only time I really remember that being a big deal was the timing of – I mean, we're just kind of ranting here, but I remember the timing of the 2009 Martin Luther King Day because the inauguration for Barack Obama as the president – the first time he was elected happened the next day. So it was sort of like almost like a Black History Week type of thing. And, you know, obviously the NBA has tons of African-American players. They all, you know, they all celebrate Martin Luther King Day. It's a very special day, you know, for those players. And Barack Obama, who is going to be exiting, enter Donald Trump. I think it's a little different this year. Would you say that? Where I don't think people are like going to be rolling out the welcome mat saying, you know, talking about politics. At least I hope not.
No, there'll be a lot of drama.
I hope not. I just don't want to see a lot of people saying
we know drama coming up.
Well, they already did their, you know, farewells, like highlights with the president and all that stuff on NBA TV and TNT already. So, you know, I mean, I'm not trying to make it out like players or black athletes will be extra defiant because a black president is exiting the White House and a conservative white president is entering the White House that a lot of people have already kind of turned on. But, you know, it's just, you know, I hate talking politics, but I really hope that doesn't happen. I do remember, though, Martin Luther King Day in 2009 was sort of like a platform for them talking about change in America, you know, how the black race has progressed into the White House and things like that. But I really don't expect too much conversation about that tomorrow, Monday. Would you say that?
Well, there has not been much progression. There's been a lot of just sort of regression on a human standpoint.
Yeah, well, that's true. That's true. This isn't Hannity and Combs. Like,
it's not politics because if you talk to any level-headed person, you know, people take things from both sides. You can like something from Republicans and something from the Democratic side. It's not to be blindly on one side. That's not good for anybody.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure there are a lot of black Republicans, you know. People like people make it out like Ben Carson is the only black Republican that ever existed. And it's like, no, there's actually plenty of them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's just, well, you know, well, I'm a small business owner. Well, I prefer tax cuts for small business. Oh, therefore, well, I now need to be against all Mexicans and Muslims. No, you can – it's
– yeah, who's paying for the wall, you know, all this.
It's gotten to the point where it has to be, you know, an us versus them. You have to either be on the red side or the blue side. You can't be in the middle, and that's sort of the problem is – you know, just as a human society, we're arguing about bathrooms and whose lives matter, and we can't just all get along.
Okay, is us versus them, because we got to transition out of this somehow, is us versus them a good narrative for professional sports or, like, you know, the big dog and the underdog? Like, do you think that's something that is more compelling, like, when you have a Warriors type of, like, superstar death lineup? Or do you feel like it's just as entertaining when you have, like, a bunch of good teams that are all somewhat likable in their own ways?
Well, the thing is, there's really no us versus them anymore. Just look at the Olympics. Oh, well, you know, you have Cousins, and then you have Durant, and then you have, you know, Carmelo. Well, they're all on different teams. So there's really no – you don't have those heated rivalries of it's definitely us or them. It's like, well, everybody's sort of likable, mm-hmm. and we're just going to play really, really hard and – you know, you're the UFC fan. There's a lot of difference because everybody's just like, oh, we're going to train hard. We're going to do our fight. And then we're all going to shake hands and get along at the end. Mm-hmm. Whereas opposed to you have the Conor McGregor, Nick Diaz, you know, dumpster fire press conferences like, yeah, you want to get into that. But they don't have that anymore in the NBA because everybody's just like, yeah, we're all professionals. We're all millionaires.
And the moment it happens, somebody, you know, touches somebody's nose and all of a sudden there's 25 security guards breaking it up, you know?
Yeah. So it's just everybody's sort of likable. Yeah, everybody's just likable now. To sort of bring the show full circle, there's no real villains of the NBA. You could try to have this, you know, like a manufactured, the Warriors are the bad guy. Yeah, but everybody still loves Curry. And
they're incredibly, entertaining. Incredibly entertaining. Like, every Warriors game I watch, even the blowouts, because they usually blow out most of their opponents, like, in the second half of games. Like, they are really, really fun to watch. Like, really fun. Like, I don't want to call them, like, they're not dastardly, really, in any way. I mean, Draymond Green can be unbearable sometimes, you know. But even Klay Thompson, just – sometimes Klay Thompson disappoints me. Like, I watch him, and it's like, man, I know he's better than that. Like, you know, and there are some days where he just pops off and he goes for 60 points or 40 points in a crucial playoff game, and you're just like, wow. Like, I know why I put so much investment into that guy. But then there are some games where you're just like, ugh. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, he knows he's the third option.
Yeah, I don't think there's a lack of harmony in Golden State. Would you say that? I know they had the really weird game where they were up big on the Memphis Grizzlies, and hey, guess what? Breaking news, Adam, the Memphis Grizzlies made a big comeback in the fourth quarter of a game and won it because, you know, super crunch time, as we talk about the last. I think the stat is that they are like 13-1 in games that are within 3 points in the final minute. Like, it's some crazy stat like that where it's like way – like where they're just great in the clutch. But anyways, they fell apart in that fourth quarter, kind of similar to what happened against Cleveland on Christmas. And they tried to kind of make a wedge of between – like the media did between Curry and Durant of whose teams is it? Whose fault was it? You know, and it was – they weren't really getting anywhere. But there was a moment there where Durant wanted to take a shot and Draymond basically just kind of like said, you know, whatever, F you take the shot, and he just kind of parked himself to the corner. Like, I don't know if there's a lack of harmony, but there are some moments with the Warriors where you feel like, oh, there's a glitch in the system.
Well, we've mentioned that they're not – we mentioned how just soft they are, so it's going to be exposed come Christmas time. Playoff time.
Defensive efficiency still good, but not as good as, like, previous years. Not as good.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, there's not a harm, but, again, these – ESPN needs to fill up 24 hours somehow. We need to get we need to make sure Tony Kornheiser and Tony Reale and everybody else has to have their opinion, and Skip Bayless is saying something on Fox Sports. So we need, you need to fill up the stats. Well, they lost, therefore there must be, you know, discord. So we need to ask questions and we need to push an issue where there really isn't one. A loss is just a loss.
Does anyone even still listen to Skip Bayless? His ratings on FS1 are like garbage. They're like under, they're like just over 100,000 viewers.
Not surprisingly.
And they paid out big, especially Shannon Sharp, who they had to get from CBS to just to do that show. You know, it's – I mean, I like Fox Sports. I wanted that network to succeed, but it's just – that's just another story.
it's the thing with Fox Sports is they – you know, remember they spent all that money. They got the Canadian Sports Center guys, and they had the Don McNabb, like, talk show.
I did not know they had a Don McNabb talk show. I didn't know that.
But it was like a round table thing that was before it, or that was part of their sports center, and it was like a 2-hour thing, and it was half like best damn sports period, half sports center, and it's, you know, just show games.
Yeah, well, not only that, they bring in two guys from Canada to run the nightly show. It's like, well, why are you bringing in two people that nobody's ever seen? Like, the one thing that Sports Center did that was smart is that for the evening sports center, they brought in – well, what they did is they cultivated a lot of their ex-NASCAR broadcasters into their regular programming, because when they lost the NASCAR contract, they wanted to keep certain talents. So they brought them into the evening show. But they bring in guys like Steve Levy and John Buchegrosh, who people know. You know, people are familiar with John Buchegrosh from NHL Tonight and – thousands and thousands and thousands of sports centers in the past. So when, and then obviously they moved Scott Van Pelt from the radio platform down to their evening show, their late night show. So they put familiarity, even though they're not putting in guys that are like Dan Patrick's or Colin Cowherd's or guys. They're letting those people walk away. You know, they're not paying out big money for those people.
Well, it's kind of hard, you know, if you have people tuning in to ESPN for, literally, what, 25, 30 years now?
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to be like, well, I'm going to change this new channel, and I'm going to forget what it is in 2 days and just put on a sports center because it's habit. And
yeah. And, I mean, I still have some, like, still reservations about when ESPN/ABC runs the finals. There are some things that still – I mean, they've had the contract for the finals since 2003. And there, I mean, Adam, there's still moments there that just make me groan where I'm just like, ugh. Like, I don't know if NBC would have done that. I don't even know if Fox would have done something like that, you know, with corporate tie-ins, you know, unnecessary things like the, I really hope they don't bring this back, but the Saturday night primetime ABC 3 flash, you know what I'm talking about? When the 3 was taken and the line would show and the line would light up.
Yeah,
if they bring that back, I might swing at somebody. That was beyond annoying, but anyways, like there are some days with the contract with ABC where I just feel like they haven't totally, like I mean the revenue is there, the cap has risen because of the revenue being put back in from the money being spent by the networks. So it's the NBA is more than glad with it, and so are the players. That's why we're not going to have a lockout.
It's ESPN that paid for the
exactly
new salary.
Exactly. Turner
we
was
want
like
more ABC games, so here we'll give you a ton of money for it.
And that's where the money is, and that's why they're dumping a lot of their higher on air talents because they're not going to be able to afford them, and that's fine. But there are some moments there where like they kind of make me groan. But for the most part, I do feel like ESPN is slowly improving. I don't like how much turnover that they've had with some of the personalities. I still prefer the Turner way, which is just even if you make a change, make it very, very subtle. You know, keep the music the same, keep the format the same, keep the storylines the same. Ernie and Charles and Kenny are there. You know, they added Shaq like a few years ago. And just kind of keep things steady. Like with ESPN, I always feel like they're trying to like reinvent the wheel every year, you know?
Well, yeah, TNT keeps it simple. We have our little, you know, our few broadcasts. Good. ESPN's like, well, we need to do everything. And,
yeah,
you know, we need to get every sport and we need to pay for
a mega cast.
You know, mega cast. And then, oh, well, now we have all these college. Well, we need to get, I think it was the other day, it was like Oakland versus Detroit Mercy was on ESPNU, and it's just like, why?
I will say this. I like ESPNU. They're based out of Charlotte, and it's just a different atmosphere. Like,
yeah,
I can tell it's produced differently, like with a little bit more of an open mind. You know, now they have had their failures. I don't know if you remember this, but they had a show called Unite, and it was like a late night college sports show with Danny Cannell, and it was like garbage. Like it was like. But here's the funny thing: at least they tried it. It was like MTV in the early '80s. Like it was like at least they tried something different. You know, did it fail? Sure, but it wasn't garbage, and it was perfectly innocent. You know.
Well, it's not perfectly innocent. It's just some executive saying, well, hey, maybe we should get people who like talk shows. Maybe we should get, you know, let's do this, let's do that, as opposed to let's just, you know, like TNT. They keep it nice and simple. Mm-hmm. They're not trying to reinvent the wheel. They're not every
year. It gets messy in the tournament, but that's because they're also affiliated with CBS. So there's a lot more complication there, you know.
Well, the tournament is just so much and – you know, you have to get all these games in literally a day that overlap four at a time.
Yes. And I hated the old – I don't know. Scott Criscoll and I have gone back and forth. He liked the old school way with the control center with Greg Gumbel and Dick Enberg and Jim Nance where they used to just kind of swing it, or Tim Brando where they used to just swing it from game to game to game. But if you were in a local area, they would give you the game that was more reasonable for where your region was. And I hated it. I wanted to see all the games. And
I hated it too, because I was stuck every year with freaking number two Duke versus Scrub University.
And look, I love LSU, but I don't want to be forced to watch the LSU NCAA tournament game if I want to watch something different. Like, what if the game becomes a blowout? I want to change it. But here I am, forced to watch it.
We're going to show you the 1 versus 16 game that's over in 3 minutes. Nope, but we're not. But I want to see this game that's within 5 points. Nope, we're going to stay on. You know, Duke is up 80 to 44.
Well, also because it was so advertising driven back then. Like, well, we need to get the local markets so that we can get as many eyeballs as possible. Now the revenue from the ads are already built in. Like, the Coca-Cola ads for the NCAA tournament, they've already committed to almost all the money there for the NCAA, because the NCAA does not have control of the college football playoff. They make no money off the playoff. That's the schools. They make money off the NCAA basketball tournament. That's where the money's made.
Oh, God, all those Southwest commercials every 4 minutes.
Exactly. Sonic, B-dubs. Now, I will say I like B-dubs. There's nothing wrong with a trip to Buffalo Wild Wings. I think we discussed this when LSU played and absolutely suffocated Lamar Jackson and the Louisville Cardinals in the Buffalo Wild Wings Citrus Bowl. But let's finish this off since we're all just kind of talking about it. And I will find a way to transition this. Alabama Clemson, I think you got a little bit of crow to eat here. I'm pretty sure you said there was going to be no like tit for tat this time.
Yeah, and I also said it very underwhelmingly, like, who cares? We know Alabama.
Oh, so you're completely downplaying your own gimmick.
I mean, I'm glad Clemson won, because anytime Alabama loses, you can only give that.
I want you to stop right there, because I want to just get your answer here before you give it away just now. Conference loyalty is a big deal, I guess, for the Southerners, like the SEC, because the football conference as a whole has been so dominant. So it's like, oh, yeah, we're the best. But the thing is, with I just lost my train of thought. With Alabama, I used to – in the early going when Saban was winning titles in Alabama, I was like, well, that's good for the SEC, so I'm okay with it. Now – maybe it's just the old geezer in me, but I'm like, you know what? Fuck Alabama. I hope they lose.
That's exactly my sentiment. At first, you'd be like, yeah, you know, at least SEC won. Okay, we could say that. But the problem now is you have people, oh, the ACC's better. No, anytime you have Boston College and Syracuse and Wake Forest in your conference, you're not the best conference.
Mm-hmm.
Those teams are god-awful.
Yeah.
Duke had one good year, and just the bottom of the ACC is terrible. But good for Clemson, good for them.
Unbelievably talented team, Clemson is. I mean, you look at the players that are going in the draft. It's one Clemson player after another. Deshaun Watson, we'll see. He's fantastic. He's basically the new Vince Young. Vince Young had the transcendent, legendary performance against USC in the Rose Bowl in the game that everybody remembers. Just quickly, would you take this game that just passed or the Rose Bowl game as the greatest ever?
I still say the Rose Bowl game.
Is there another one that you might think of off the top of your head, like Penn State, Miami, in the Fiesta Bowl in 1985, or you know, one of those great Florida State games or Florida State Florida games? Like, is there another one you can think of, like right in?
No,
the
I'm just gonna stick with the Rose Bowl game, and that was the
2006 Rose Bowl, 2005 season.
That was the entire game. This one, the first half was terrible.
It was. Yeah,
and it didn't get going to really the fourth quarter. In the end, it was just now desperation kicked in on both sides. But the Rose Bowl game was just a complete game.
It was very epic, though. You know, it very much had the feel. It was very weirdly it had the feel of Golden State Cleveland, where I'm gonna try to make a comparison here. Okay, the first time Golden State Cleveland happened, Cleveland sort of punched Golden State in the face early in the series, even though Kyrie got hurt, because Golden State was sort of new to the ball game, and they took him for granted. And then Golden State sort of had to change their lineup to go small, started Iguodala, they win the series. Alabama-Clemson the first time, when they played in the Glendale, it felt like that, where Alabama had blown up Michigan State in the Cotton Bowl, and they had a very different team from the years before that when they won the national title. It was very different. So they sort of took Clemson for granted, and Clemson and Deshaun Watson got up, really punched them early. Like, they gave them a nice spark. And then Alabama had to flex their muscles late to finish it off. This one was one where Alabama was grinding out Clemson early. They were running the ball well. They had a 14-point lead. And Clemson just did not quit. And even when Alabama would get a score, Clemson would come back with another score in the second half. And then by the fourth quarter, it was a dogfight. You know, you were just trying to survive. And that's kind of what the second finals between Cleveland and Golden State felt like. Where, you know, you get my point of view, though.
Yeah, and, you know, now we'll have a third finals between Golden State and Cleveland where it's just like, you know.
Well,
I guess it'll be good.
Has there ever been a three – has two teams ever played each other 3 years in a row in the finals? I'd say if so, it would have been the Lakers either when they were in Minneapolis or L.A. against Boston. But I think that has to be the only time that's happened. Maybe the St. Louis Hawks and the Boston Celtics back in the Bob Pettit years. But I know in the modern era it is yet to happen. I don't think it's happened.
Yeah, but just to wrap up your question, I guess take a few years for the test of time because, it's the best game ever. It's a classic. You'll forget about it in like 2 months.
I'll never forget that one. I won't.
this college football championship?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll remember this one.
People have sort of already forgotten last year's NCAA, you know, basketball championship, which was the best of all time.
Best finish, I'll say.
But there's just, you know, there's so much else going on now. People are just so distracted. It doesn't have the same impact, I think, as it did before.
Well, let me say this, because we'll wrap this up with an NBA tie-in. Why is it hard to beat the same team 2 years in a row? Is it because they're more familiar with you? Is it because you take them for granted? Are there other circumstances that sort of influence all these different matchups? Now, the Bulls beat the Jazz twice in a row in 97 and 98. And I'm pretty sure the Celtics beat the Lakers 2 years in a row in 68 and 69. So it's not unprecedented. You know, the last time it happened in the NFL was Dallas and Buffalo. But why is it hard for teams when they play each other the second time to get the same result?
Because it's different circumstances. It's different. You know, every season is different. Everybody's now a year older. Some people, you know, a little more complacent. Some people a little more hungry. Some people a little more older. Some people, you know, healthier. It's just every setup is different. Unless you have a complete, you know, Buffalo just didn't. They didn't have a team that could possibly, you needed everything to go right for them to win any of those 4 years they were in.
Well, the first one, they had a really great shot. They just couldn't get the ball back. The Giants were just sitting on the ball, sitting on the ball, sitting on the ball. The moment they get the ball, Buffalo, they'd move it. They'd score, but they couldn't get the ball, you know?
And just with a lot of things, it comes up to luck.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's the same thing. You know, you could have now, let's say Kyrie goes out. Oh, well, then Golden State should mop the floor. If Durant goes out, well, they're going to be
in trouble.
We don't even know if they'll make the finals. Yeah. So it's one of those things. Yeah, it's completely different every year. But we got time to figure that out.
I know. I mean, if Cleveland does play Golden State, which a lot of people expect, that would be three in a row. It would be historic just because it just never, ever, ever happens that two professional clubs, the same two, play each other three times in a row. But, you know, I said, look, the history says – when one team wins a championship, when they play again, it goes the other way. And, you know, Clemson did pull it off. Now, well, if we do it with Cleveland and Golden State, it's different because that's already happened. Now we'll have a rubber match. So we'll see how that goes. Different circumstances, like you said. And that's going to be wrapping up this show. We'll do the midseason awards next episode because I think we got a little bit more going on for this one than what we have to talk about here. Anything you want to finish up with or – as people celebrate their maybe holiday or their maybe their day off of work?
It's a banking holiday, so
yeah, so if
schools
you,
are out.
Yeah, if you work for the bank or if you work at the unless you're
Biloxi, Mississippi, which is celebrating Great Americans Day.
I heard about that. I live only about 50 miles away from Biloxi, but I
you stay classy, Mississippi.
I'm not going to really touch that with a 10-foot pole. But but on behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. Take care, guys. Enjoy some basketball.